You ready?
I'm ready.
I'll go ahead and call us to order this morning, September 23rd of the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just a point of personal privilege.
Sure.
I would just like to really congratulate Mr. Sanders and his wife. Saw yesterday that his daughter made an announcement that she's going to attend the Naval Academy, and I think that's a great honor. We'll be playing basketball there, and I think that I'm sure they're extremely proud, but I think knowing her and seeing how she's grown up over the years, I think this is a great opportunity for her, and I just wanted to personally congratulate the family and Molly on an excellent choice for furthering her education.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
Wayne, that's very, very nice. We are really, really proud, and thank God she takes after her mother.
Public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. I'm not seeing anybody move towards the mic. Consideration of minutes from 9:16.
I'll move approval.
Second.
We have a motion, a second. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Personnel actions.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion, a second. Anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Consideration of claims.
I like those. I'll move approval.
Second.
Well, they're getting up there, but hey, that's not bad. Still under a million.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The claims have been approved. Consent agenda. Please add road closures 15-14, 15-15, and 15-16.
Move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Those have been approved. Takes us down to public hearing items. First, consideration of Ordinance 231, amending Chapter 80, Floodplain Management Program. Leanne Harder.
Good morning.
Hi, Leanne.
Good morning. Good morning.
This ordinance in front of you is fairly straightforward. If you'll recall, about 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, FEMA started remapping Whirly Creek and College Creeks to the southwest of the city of Ames. As such, they did a physical map revision, or a PMR, to the National Flood Insurance official floodplain maps. What this ordinance does is to adopt that as the official floodplain map for Story County. The revisions to Chapter 80 Floodplain Management Program are simply to change the date from February 20th, 2008 to October 16th, 2014. Those are the nature of the changes. I would ask that the board consider waiving second and third considerations so that we could get this published and placed in the paper for publication prior to October 16th, and we have received no public comment. Are there any questions?
I don't have any.
No.
With that, I'll open the public hearing if anybody has any comments or questions in regards to the floodplain management ordinance and the proposed change, that this would be the time to come forward. Not seeing anybody move towards the mic, I'll turn to the board.
I will move approval of ordinance number 231, amending Chapter 80 of the Floodplains Management Program, and waive the second and third reading.
Second.
We've got a motion and a second to approve the amendments to the Floodplain Management Program on the first reading, and therefore waiving the second and third. Is there anything further?
No, other than just to say that, Leanne, we certainly have really appreciated all the work that you've done in staying on top of this. And as we look at not only all of Story County, when we talk about floodplain, I think we are just in the midst of what's going to happen futuristic. As you well know, in the city of Ames and the development, a lot of new places going in on Duff Avenue is being elevated. And me being on the board of directors of the Boys and Girls Club, we're just going to wonder what the future may hold for that building. That water's going to go somewhere with all the higher elevation, which means that it's going to change the route in that area. And while that's strictly within the city's jurisdiction, it could have some other unintended consequences downstream. And so I just think that, again, flooding and building in floodplains is really a countywide issue, and I just hope that we will stay at the table in having discussions with our city leaders as well.
With that, I'll call for the question. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved on the first reading. Next is consideration request for proposal for the communication equipment systems upgrade. Leanne Harder again. Welcome back.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. If you'll recall, a couple weeks ago, we were in front of you setting today's public hearing date. There's also another item on your agenda that is related to this matter. The RFP, request for proposals, that we're bringing forward to you today is for the communications equipment upgrade on the tower that we have a separate process going. We did put the draft format in front of the board for on the agenda. I do have one correction to note. Since it was originally published, that is on page 6. It's a quite simple fix. It says Leanne Harder, Story County Planning and Development, no longer with that department, so I just need to correct that. And if the board does approve today, we'll release this proposal both on the bid postings on our website and then send it out to various entities as well. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
No questions. I'll go ahead and open the public hearing. Anyone that has any comments on this request for proposal for the communication system upgrade, this would be the time to come forward. Not seeing a huge rush, I'll turn to the board.
Again, I would move approval of the request for proposal for the communication systems upgrade.
With noted change?
With noted changes, yes.
I'll second it.
Okay, thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That RFP has been approved. That takes us to additional items. We're going to change this just a little bit. We'll take item number 3 first. Consideration of Resolution 1525, the final Natty subdivision plat. Located on certain lands under the ownership of Orson D. Natty Jr., located in Section 36 of Milford Township. Good morning, Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
As you had mentioned, this is Resolution 1525. It's the final subdivision plat for the Natty subdivision. It's a subdivision of one lot into 7 lots and 4 outlots. If you will recall, back on August 12th of this year, the Board of Supervisors did approve the preliminary plat of the Natty subdivision. There was 3 conditions. The first condition had 5 subparts, and they were all all related to plat corrections that were requested. Just a quick note, and I think even before the Board of Supervisors had met, all of those corrections had been made, but still, the final plat and the preliminary plat are within conformance of each other. There was no changes that were noted between the two. There is some easement dedication that is taking place within this subdivision. All those easements were dedicated to the public, so Story County, none of them were dedicated directly to Story County. The covenants have been reviewed. There is no conflict with any of the covenants with our current regulations. As usual, we do note that the county doesn't have any enforcement of covenants. Those are all civil issue. Margaret Janes has looked over everything as far as wastewater. She is satisfied and set to go with this. The last thing is on the development agreement. Currently, the developer is taking out a development agreement with the City of Nevada. In the past, with similar subdivisions like this, where the subdivision is going to take access through easement, we've never required a development agreement. So I think with keeping up with PAC's practices, it would be appropriate for the developer and the city maybe to enter into that development agreement. Probably isn't going to be anything that could happen there. It sounds like the access roads they're going to be put in are all going to be graveled, and I think Orson is here, but I think he's ready to start laying some of that gravel down immediately from the sounds of it. So with that, I don't think I have anything else to add. One more thing. I did send this around to the interagency review team. Leanne did have one comment on one of the plat notes relating to floodplain. with this suggested change that just clarified the chapter number in our ordinance, and that change has been made. So with that, the alternatives were listed on the staff report, and if there's any questions of me, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
My only question, as far as you know, has there been some communication with the City of Nevada already?
Yep. They approved the final plat already. I know through the months, I think we've been working with them just to make sure that the changes that were made, everybody was both in agreement on those changes. But, yeah, we have been working with the City of Nevada for the last few months on this one.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Natty, do you have anything to add?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Oh. If you don't, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'd move that we accept the final subdivision plat of the Natty subdivision as put forward in case SUB 0913 and adopt resolution 1525.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 1525, finalizing the plat for the Natty subdivision. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot, aye. That's been approved. Thanks, Charlie.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go back to number one. Acknowledge receipt of proposals for the tower replacement project and establish a time frame for review.
Should have a sheet from Shive Hattery that Jamie Downey has put together for Story County. And what we'll do is we'll open the bids that we did receive, ask the board to acknowledge that too, and then Jamie has offered to review these for Story County as part of the contract through this process, and then we'll come back for a recommendation next week. Bear with me. This is the first time John and I have done something like this. Okay, this, we did receive one proposal, and it's from Sabre, S-A-B-R-E, Communications Group, or Communications Corporation, and their address is Sioux City, Iowa. And do you want to help me see if we can find the amount that they bid?
Yep.
John and I will tell you the amount.
Do they have a bid bond attached?
Let me get there.
Okay.
Yeah. The amount is $92,596.00, 92596. And they do have the bid bond enclosed.
Okay.
So with that, that's your one and only bid that we did receive, and with the board's direction, we'll send this on to Shive Hattery.
We just need to
acknowledge receipt.
Acknowledge receipt of the proposal.
Okay. I would move that we acknowledge receipt of the request for proposal from Sabre Communication Corp, and then wait to hear back at a later time.
I'll second it.
Mm-hmm.
Motion to second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved, and you can go ahead and send that on to Shive Hattery and have them take a look at it. Thanks, guys. Discussion on urban renewal area projects. Leanne Harder.
I have a very similar presentation to what was given last week. There are some revisions, and I'll just quickly outline those. We did get some additional information from the applicants. Start with Collins. We received a couple of emails from the mayor of Collins that I did forward on to the board, but I'll just summarize the nature of the changes. Following last week's meeting, the mayor did indicate that they did not receive the Wellmark grant for the first application, so did respectfully request that application be withdrawn. However, did ask that the board consider a separate project, or in essence a new project, in lieu of that, and I'll get to that in a second. Well, it's the mayor on September 17th did ask they would like to change and lower the amount and attach it to a separate project. So in regards to traffic speeds traveling through town on Highway 65 due to the changes to the viaduct, they have always been a safety issue, but we expect the issue to get much worse when the road is opened up. The city wants to place solar-powered speed monitors along that route, one on each side, I would imagine, to remind drivers to slow down. The cost of these are about $5,000 apiece. If possible, we'd like to see if the county will pick up the cost of one of them while we buy the other. The project budget would be $10,000. The city is making a 50-50 match. So they are asking to, in essence, attach a new project to the request. It would be past the deadline, obviously, but it's within the board's purview to decide whether or not you do want to accept that proposal or not. And then you did ask me to bring forward some additional information on the storm sewer project. You know, there's some, in the past you've funded water lines and you've not funded road improvements. The storm sewer system is a little bit unique, and this is the first proposal you've received as such. As part of the underground and overground infrastructure that makes up part of a community. Just quickly, what they submit is this image down the left-hand side of the slide. You can see that these blue areas are where culverts would be placed, and then the red, I'll try to go down the direction with the cursor.
That's in the upper. That's the upper one, right, that you're referring to now on the picture, the diagram?
No, this lower left-hand
corner. Oh, okay, gotcha. I see the arrow now. Thanks.
See the cursor. It's kind of difficult to see.
Right.
And I don't have my pointer, but they're looking at an overland type of overtop kind of storm sewer, so not a pipe to direct the water through. It would just, and I found an image online to kind of show what it would resemble. It would be going through these lawns. Currently, this is one of those areas that is experiencing storm sewer-related flash flooding. And with that, I wanted to share with the board, all that area is in the floodplain. That's the image to the upper right-hand corner. That is the map floodplain for the city of Collins. So the improvements could possibly help with the floodplain issues that each of the property owners are dealing with through some sort of a letter of map change. But again, it's not your standard underground pipe that you're moving water. There are some storm sewers that is they put in within the right-of-way of a street improvement, a storm sewer. But in this case, they're doing flowage easements and above ground. Does that help to kind of it's a different breed. I do have the sense that if the board does approve this request, there are other communities that will seek very similar requests because the issue of storm sewers is a very broad, very big issue, and it's part of our infrastructure that is aging immensely. So that's Collins. Colo Unesco, there were no changes. Huxley, the board did ask me to verify the support by Story County Conservation Board. I did hear back from Mike Cox, the director of Story County Conservation. The Conservation Board, in November 2013, did approve a resolution supporting the project by endorsing a grant application to SRPTA, of which grant that grant application has actually been awarded to Story County Conservation. So they definitely do support this project. Then going on to Slater, and Jennifer is here if you have any questions, but she did supply some pictures that I did forward on or give to the board supervisors this morning. One shows the current city hall, and then the other shows the improvements with brick pavers and street improvements. You can see the difference with the red pavers between the two. And did you have any information you wanted to share? She's just here to answer questions.
Is this the red that's in front of here, is that something that will be either elevated on the sidewalk or the sidewalk will just stay the same?
I believe there'll be red pavers. There'll be brick pavers.
Oh, okay.
The colors just show the difference.
Match up the decor of the building and so forth. Okay. And so.
And then last I did reach out to City Zeering to make sure, as we had thought, that both buildings under that application were owned by the City of Zeering. And City Representative did share with me that both are indeed owned by the City of Zeering. Are there any questions?
Not for me.
No, and I don't know whether a comment is appropriate here. But
now's the time for us to talk about.
Okay.
This.
Well, going back to Collins again, and while I appreciate the request for consideration to change the awarding in place of the $10,000 for the Main Street revitalization due to the fact that it is past the deadline and under circumstances, since there, when I put the pencil to the request, there's obviously more dollars needed than what we currently have in terms of our balance. And so to add, and so normally my thought process is even though I support several that's already there, I would probably think that we might want to talk about a reduction in the requested amount to try to bring us a little bit closer into what our current balance is, unless we are going to anticipate bonding for additional dollars to meet these projects, which I don't think we've talked about as yet. And so my personal feeling would be, while this is certainly a worthwhile project, but based on the demand for other projects, I would not be in support of us adding this at this time. That would just be my take.
Yeah, Wayne, I agree with you probably. I agree with where you ended up. I think I view it a little differently. We have been, I believe, really, really flexible in allowing applicants to amend the projects that they give us. But we have not, to this point, had a situation where, okay, I understand we're not doing that project, but now what about this one? Something entirely different. I think that's opening up a can of worms that is not appropriate for us to open. And so I'm with you. I think we've got to politely decline to entertain any new project from Collins at this point.
And I think his argument certainly has merit, but I think there's other avenues. And Leanne, I think I talked to you about that. I know there's several communities around the county that have those solar powered speed. Slater's got one on the north end of town. I think Roland's got one, a couple of them maybe. I think there's other avenues that they can pursue. The Traffic Safety Institute, I think, would be more than willing to listen to them. I think there's grant programs that are available for those. So,
well, and Paul, I think you're right. I think it'd be appropriate for this board to consider a request, just not on this venue at
right.
this point.
Yep.
Third one is the storm sewer upgrades.
Yeah.
That's a drainage district. I mean, if you guys will recall, a couple years ago when we were dealing with all the drainage districts, that Collins, that Collins and going just to the northeast of Collins is one big drainage district. Leanne's right. A lot of it's in the floodplain. At that point, we tried to have the city of Collins take that drainage district back over, but instead of being 25% of the drainage district as required, as I recall, they were like 24.2%. Again, I think it's a really, really good project, but I think it falls more within the drainage district than it does a TIF conversation with the Board of Supervisors. I think I'd like to hear more about this, but not on this avenue of funding. And if we need to put on our hats as drainage district trustees for that drainage district and come back and have the conversation again with the city of Collins, I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't think it makes sense as part of this process.
Right. This was the one that I probably struggled with the most, and I just had difficulty making the connection for the TIF funding on this one in particular. So that's kind of where I landed on it.
Now, let me just come back. You remember the memo that he did send regarding the storm sewer? You all had a chance to kind of look through those. Again, I think the question here relates to, as you say, the overall drainage in this particular area, and I think there are some engineering and some changes that are going to be anticipated, which would improve the overall flow of the water going through there. But I guess beforehand I hadn't connected it to our past discussion regarding the drainage. That I'm glad you brought that up, because it does bring back a thought process that we need to take a look at. And while I'm not sure at this point that I could say unequivocally that I would not want to consider looking at this project, I think under that circumstances I would probably want to have more discussion regarding the entire connection between the drainage problem of past with the present and future before making a determination of awarding anything to this project. So I do appreciate
and
you bringing
that up. Yeah, that would be great with me. I come down a little stronger than that, and my preference would be that we decline to fund it as part of this process, but we also take action and refer it to Scott Wall and say we would like to have a drainage district meeting on this issue, because the reality is this is at the southern point, the flow point of that drainage district, and if we can improve the flow through Collins, we're going to help that entire drainage district. But I think it's a drainage issue, not a Board of Supervisors TIF issue. So I'm more than willing, Wayne, if we need to have the conversation some more about whether it fits with TIF. I'm just telling you where I stand at this point on where I think it fits.
Well, my term would be we wouldn't take action at this point simply because of the unknown of that. But I didn't want to leave it out there with the idea that we wouldn't be willing to revisit this under some format.
And I'm with
yeah.
you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I'm. I think I'm set on where I'm going to go. I mean, we're not making any decisions today. I know that.
So yeah, next Tuesday is decision
right.
day.
So if you guys want further discussion on the rest of these, that's up to you. But I think I think with the last week's discussion and today's discussion, I think I know where I'm going to land on these. So,
well, Mr. Chair, though, I would be remiss if I do know that Mark Jackson from Story City is here today, and I know last
sure.
week we did have some discussion relative to that project, and I think I would be remiss if we wouldn't at least allow him an opportunity to once again communicate with us regarding this particular project. I hope that he listened to the tape from last week. Did you have an opportunity to do so?
No.
Okay.
In the minutes weren't online, so I didn't have a chance to.
Okay. So would you mind coming up again? And I know you had some strong feelings. Maybe you weren't really prepared to remember all of your notes.
I think you're right. I think
from
you know,
the last
Mark's
time.
Here, Jennifer's here from Slater as well,
right.
And we need to make sure that there, since we had conversation last week that Mark was not privy to, we need to make sure that he recognizes where that conversation
right.
Was. Again, I would just underscore no decisions have been made.
Right.
The conversation as it regarded to Story City and construction of the new street out there in the business park. And you guys just helped me if I mischaracterized what the conversation was. It was we had a similar request as part of this process last year from Colo. We also had a similar request before it was amended from Slater this year. And in the previous case with Colo, we declined to pave a road within or construct a road within the city limits of Colo. And this one very squarely, at least for me, Mark, fell in that same category. And so I indicated at that point that I was leaning toward declining to fund this based on the
past. Was the Colo one in their business park there, or was this just a street within the community?
Just a street within the community.
See, my point would be is that that's vastly different than what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
The intent of... And I'm going to respectfully disagree.
Absolutely.
But the intent of TIF is twofold. One is slum and blight. Mm-hmm. And primarily when TIF was first started, the idea was primarily within downtown areas.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of it is economic development. And primarily where TIF is used is in business parks, mm-hmm. with the construction of infrastructure. I think in talking with the legislature, if you talk with them, that's primarily that it's seen its two uses. So this squarely fits in what the use of tax increment financing is for, that it is for economic development that creates jobs and adds to the property tax base.
I completely agree with you.
Not just
completely agree with you, with the one caveat that it completely fits. It's completely appropriate and traditional. The way you're using TIF, you're TIFing that area, and you're going to take those revenues in order to put in the infrastructure and the items that you need there. It's clearly appropriate.
Correct.
What we've done with these wind towers is created more of an opportunity fund, and that's what I struggle with, Mark, is taking those dollars and plug into infrastructure in an area that's already TIFed by the municipality. I'm in full favor of the project.
Right.
I'm even in favor of the county finding a way to participate. I'm just not in favor of the county participating with the TIF revenue from the wind towers. And so that's my...
Right. But it's one of the, you know, this is economic development, mm-hmm. and it's the number one goal of yours is transportation, infrastructure, improvements, enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't think that, as I say, futuristic, this one presents some interesting challenges for us because I think this board 4 years ago made a concentrated effort to really try to divest a little bit more in understanding what role the county could play in economic development initiatives.
Oh.
And we were modeling, in my opinion, I was modeling a little bit after Dubuque County and some of the things that they've been able to do in terms of infrastructure improvement, attracting new businesses, and all of these types of things. And while we decided we weren't going to initially be the key player, we felt there could be some potential partnership roles that could be played, and we began to put some additional dollars towards some economic development activities. But as the future goes forward, that's going to be part of our challenge is to look at what is the role, what is the appropriate funding mechanism, how can the county assist in attracting new businesses to the area, especially if it's going to create job opportunities for, and I use the term job opportunities, for our residents rather than job opportunities that is transit, you know, to and fro. So I don't think we're quite there. I think we're at the cusp of having projects and having discussions as we move forward. But I think the issue, as Mr. Sanders has alluded to, was the is it truly the appropriate use of these wind tower dollars the way that we initially set that up to be able to use that, or is there a different mechanism or a different funding stream that we might be able to take a look at to help support a project like this? And I think that's part of where we are now, and I don't think we've come down with a definitive answer one way or the other at this point.
You know, maybe in the future what you might look at is that it sounds like the concern you might have is that it's already an existing TIF district, whereas McCall is their entire city's in a TIF district, is that the city should identify specifically where their match or their dollars are coming from so that you can ensure that they're not TIF dollars, because maybe many of these projects on the match side from the city are actually coming from TIF financing as well. We're just upfront about that it will be from that. And I think one of the things we brought to is that we were only requesting 10%, which is, you know, on your end of things, where we're on the hook for a whole lot more than that.
Absolutely.
Right.
As we said last week, I mean, it's a great, what you guys are doing out there with that business park, it's a great project. It's something that, I fully support. I would love to find a way to demonstrate the support that I feel for what you guys are doing. I just struggle with this. And it's not even roads that I struggle with as much, because we did, you know, 590th Street using TIF dollars. But though that's a road that's outside of a municipality, it was direct use of the TIF dollars from Vetter to do it. It was a completely natural result of TIF. This one just starts to get more complex for me when it's within a municipality. It's already being funded largely by TIF dollars. It just happens to be something that Story City is TIFing, and I've got trouble using this financing mechanism in order to do it. And so that's where I'm going to come down next week, and I just think it's appropriate for you to know that since you're here today.
Well, I appreciate that.
I have no doubt that their venture is going to be successful up there, and I'm kind of land on this where Mr. Sanders did with the taking the TIF funds from the wind towers and spend them in an area that's already that you're going to use TIF funds to develop this. So and I think it's important for this board to be consistent, and as we go down we'll get more and more requests. But you know, there was a very interesting article in the Sunday paper about a county in Iowa that's having some difficulty over.
And actually, that legislator said the purpose, and I read the same article, that legislator said the purpose of TIF is for infrastructure for economic development, job creation purposes. Mm-hmm. He probably would land in favor of this is the appropriate use of TIF dollars within the intent of the law.
Correct. I think it is, and I think it is clearly what you're using your TIF dollars.
Right.
I struggle with the use of these additional TIF dollars.
And kind of what you pointed out earlier, and you guys have done a great job in economic development, is we really just want you to be a partner in all the great success we're having up there.
We thought
this is a wonderful opportunity for you guys.
Mm-hmm. It is. Let's find a way to make it happen. This just isn't it for me.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Any source of funding you guys want to give to us. I'm not limited to TIF.
You missed your calling. City Rick. Man, you should have been a salesman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Okay. I don't know if I have any other questions.
I don't have any other questions.
Jennifer,
other...
anything else you want to add? Okay. With that, I think we can probably...
Now, my comment or question, and maybe I alluded to it a little bit, again, for next week when we get down to the finalization, one of the things that I was just trying to arbitrarily do is look at each of the projects, look at what I thought might be a reasonable amount to look at, and I obviously came up with a figure showing that the request, even with some of the adjustments that I was anticipating recommending next week, still exceeds what our current balance is. And so the discussion for me as we move forward next year will be, are there going to be some projects here that we support but we'll probably recommend funding at a lesser amount? I think what we did, if you recall last week, we at least talked about moving the Colonesco project down, you know, just slightly, but I don't think we made any suggested recommendations for any of the others. So I will be interested in hearing, you know, what the two of you think in terms of where we go with the actual fund balance that is available to award. Do we really want to bond for additional dollars based on the worthiness of some of these projects? And if we want to look at reducing the asking amount, which obviously has been justified, in my opinion, but based on available dollars, and trying to include more people in the pie rather than just cherry picking one or two, making sure that there was some funding for each of the ones we approved. I think it's going to be, you know, that challenge for us next week as we make that final determination.
I think you're right. Only thing I would add before we move on, Leanne, I really appreciated Mark's suggestion of including a mechanism in the future that describes where the city's portion or whoever's portion of the remaining portion of funding is coming from for any project that comes to us, because I do think it's something we need to know if TIF is already being used in a certain project. I mean, that changes it for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With that, we'll move to agency reports. Emergency management, Keith Morgan.
Keith, it feels like it's been forever since you've been here.
That's good. That means that you're not seeing too much. And first off, I'd like to congratulate you and your daughter on getting the opportunity to go to Annapolis, but I've got to say, go Air Force, be Navy.
Oh, come on.
For my report, I'd like to start off with planning. Our office has started working to revise the next round of emergency support functions, and we'll be working on the basic plan, hazmat, the emergency management section, and disaster recovery. We've already begun to dig into disaster recovery, which is a multifaceted plan ranging from donations management to debris removal. Through this planning, I hope that we can ensure that county resources, such as secondary roads and community services, are used efficiently during a response and that we meet the needs of our residents in the unincorporated areas during a disaster. The ability of Story County Administration to continue to function should a large-scale disaster impact its operations is an important part of the overall disaster response capability of Story County. With that in mind, our office is assisting a small committee of county agencies to develop a continuity of operations plan. This group will be evaluating county processes to identify ways to make them more resilient to disasters, prioritize recovery resources, and define responsibilities and authorities to help county administration adapt to the environment of disaster operations. This will be a long-term project that will take the support of all the department heads and elected officials.
And Keith, I'll just step in right there. I hope you don't mind if I make you a little disjointed here. That was something that we put on Leanne's work program to spearhead the development of this. I mean, emergency management is going to play a vital role. It's going to take support of the board in making sure all of our department heads continue to be at the table when it comes to these kind of things. But we have asked that Leanne spearhead the development of this. And you said it's going to take a while. It's a 24-month process, isn't it, to try to work our way through this?
As we work our way on down, the first thing we began is at the top level, looking at how the responsibilities are divided amongst the different department heads and elected officials. But once we get that defined and once we start to characterize the sorts of things that these department head and elected officials need to look at, their own internal processes, they will have to actively take away these areas for homework, essentially, take them back to their departments, evaluate what is the most important thing that they provide to the overall response of this administration to an emergency, and look through those priorities and figure out ways that they can reestablish those should a disaster impact them. For instance, if their workspaces are no longer usable, what information do they need? What resources do they need to move to a different location? And it's going to take some real homework by the individual departments. And once that's done, we've got to bring all that back together again and integrate the different priorities amongst the different department heads and elected officials within the administration, get those collated, and then bring it back forward, put together the plan, train on the plan, and then exercise that plan for it to truly be effective. So 24 months is definitely the minimum amount of time to get all the way through that cycle.
It's larger and more complex than anything Story County has ever taken on, trying to pull this this continuation of operations plan together. COOP-COG, is that right?
COOP-COG, continuity of operations, continuity of government. The way that I like to approach it is like a business does, business continuity. What is it going to take to get us back to serving our customers as quickly as possible, looking at both the internal and the external stakeholders that we have? We've also begun an initiative to work closely with law enforcement, fire departments, and emergency medical services to discuss how they would coordinate their actions if we have a violent intruder situation in one of our schools or workplace. The rapid and fluid nature of these events requires that general roles and responsibilities be defined so these different agencies can better support each other during an actual event. My starting point is a meeting with representatives of the Sheriff's Office on October 3rd, since they have the potential to work with any of the 14 fire and EMS districts across our county. Our efforts to do this planning should also help us respond to any sorts of similar events. In our effort to build resiliency into our own command and control capabilities, we have begun to search other county buildings for a backup emergency operations center location. We have developed a list of requirements and desired capabilities for a facility to support backup EOC operations, and our first stop was Conservation Headquarters, where we received good support from Mike Cox. In the future, we'll be looking at the Human Services Building and other non-county facilities.
Yeah, and what I'd suggest in the Human Services Building is that second floor multi-purpose space right. that we have there, what it would take to fit that out to be prepared to be an EOC in the event our EOC here was not usable.
Exactly. We've been looking at a lot of the capabilities. We're cataloging what is internet capabilities, either through wireless or hardwired phone capabilities, radio connectivity for us using our portable radios. How well can you get there in and out? And we're going to put together this whole list and then evaluate it. Once we do that, though, we are going to work with other agencies to find those resources. It's one thing to have a space, but we're also looking to see if there are some shared resources when it comes to computers and things like that that could be pre-staged in a location so that we could, if this building was completely demolished, we would be able to start up operations.
Well, you could start by making sure I have a MacBook Pro or whatever that could easily be transported along, because I think, you know, needing that added communication. But then you'd have to hire somebody to train me on a daily basis as to how to use it.
Well, my comment was going to be you're talking to computer caveman here when it comes to whether it's a Mac or a PC.
Yeah, I think location is key for us. The question also comes up is, since Ames is so close to us and they have an operations center, that when we talk about redundancy, you know, how they would factor in assisting in the event of a disaster where we would have to utilize an area, say, within a municipality. Such. Now, the conservation provides more of a unified county response type of situation where it's, you know, in a remote area, and if there are some things that could be done to enhance that operation, I think it has a lot of merit. But obviously the Human Service Center, second floor right now, I mean, that's an ideal room for a large gathering of folk. But, you know, I think that those are going to be a couple of interesting things to discuss in terms of what existing infrastructure is already there, what would it take to set a remote site up. And I think when it's all said and done, it's going to come down to cost and convenience.
And some of the other non-county facilities we're looking at is the Huxley tornado shelter.
Oh, okay.
Down there that is also has quite a bit of capabilities in terms of backup generators. We're also looking at Iowa State EH&S building that has considerable capabilities.
Right. Okay,
we're going to cast the net wide, and we've got a bit of a matrix to look at, and things like backup power are going to be essential for it.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
For preparedness, through grant funds, our office has been able to employ two contractors that have taken on administrative activities of the Medical Reserve Corps and our Coalition for Disaster Recovery. They are working hard to grow or revitalize these two volunteer organizations to ensure we have a volunteer base that can surge to meet the needs of our communities during a disaster. On the training side, the coordinator attended Homeland Security training on two very important issues, donations management and emergency planning for schools. Both these subjects directly tie into the planning that's going on in our offices at this time. As I briefed in my last report, Iowa Homeland Security sponsored a change to Iowa Code, and received funding which allowed them to purchase mass notification services for the entire state, and they're going to be providing it to local communities at no cost to the counties. On September 16th, I met with representatives of the three dispatch agencies and Nevada Public Safety, who all have access to mass notification systems, and we reviewed the capabilities of the state system as offered. Our general impression is that the state system offers significant improvements over our current system we have, and it provides a potential cost savings of maybe up towards $18,000 a year. The drawback to the system is that it would require current users to re-register, the development of new operational procedures and training, and also it gives this system to Iowa Homeland Security, which takes some of the control of mass notification in terms of who we contract with out of our hands. Further research is being done on the issues brought up during the meeting, and this topic will be discussed both at the next Emergency Management Commission and E911 board meetings. While it's not an area of direct responsibility for emergency management, my office is facilitating discussions on the current capabilities of emergency medical services and how the future population growth and change in demographics will impact the system. This issue intersects with emergency management responsibilities when we do planning for medical response to disasters. Agencies that operate ambulances in Story County have been invited to discuss these issues during the next Emergency Management Commission meeting so that jurisdictional executives from across the county will be able to gain a greater understanding of these issues.
Keith, stop right. Talk for just a minute what happened on the night of Visha with our ambulances.
It's our understanding that pretty much all of the ambulances within Story County were committed to that event. That and also anecdotally, as we listen to the radios down in our offices, we hear a lot of times when it seems like we are using the full capacity that we have in ambulance services. Now, the ambulance services, you often think about just the ambulance, but actually it is an entire system that starts with the dispatching agencies through our first responders, which are out in the local communities, to the ambulance systems that go out and transport to the hospitals and the hospitals themselves. So when we looked at this system, it became apparent that there is no one agency that has full responsibilities, authorities to deal with these issues on capacity and the overall system. So that is why, while emergency management doesn't have those kinds of responsibilities and authorities, we have noted that this could impact our ability to react to a disaster. And we're trying to raise the awareness so that we can look down the road as this county grows and so that we can have a thoughtful process when it comes to adjusting our systems to the future.
Mm-hmm. And not only, Keith's 100% right, but not only do we have to look at it from an emergency management point of view, how it could impact us, this is one of the only times, maybe the only time, where we gather every mayor in Story County and a representative from the Board of Supervisors in the same room in the same place, and that seems like a completely appropriate time to bring these ambulance providers in to at least have the conversation. Again, no authority from emergency management to mandate or even really suggest anything. We're simply looking at this as an opportunity to try to get parties together to have the conversation and recognizing that it's something that could have a dramatic impact on emergency management services.
In July, our office partnered with the Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, RSVP, and Mid-Iowa Community Action, MICA, to use grant funds to provide weather radios and preparedness information to low-income households. These households are typically our most vulnerable populations as they tend to live in structures that do not have basements. RSVP programmed the radios and put together the informational packets on severe weather. And then MICA helped us identify low-income households across the county to receive the radios and the information. This is another example of the value of combining efforts of volunteer organizations and governmental agencies to reduce our exposure to disaster risk. On the response side, on June 30th, the northern part of Story County experienced high winds and heavy rains. Story City and Zering had significant tree damage, and a couple of farms on the northeast edge of the county sustained damage to outbuildings. This storm demonstrated the value of adopting the policy of activating outdoor warning sirens for high winds, as residents in Zering spoke about how the sirens alerted them to the approaching storm, even though the weather conditions in the town were not severe at that time. Emergency management also activated storm watch duties for a couple more times during the summer and requested the deployment of storm spotters, but we were lucky that most of the storms went south of us. On behalf of our office and the National Weather Service, I'd like to thank the volunteer fire departments for their assistance storm spotting, as information they provide us helps us build a good situational awareness on these potentially dangerous storms.
Keith, before you go on, remind the board what changes we made, what changes emergency management made in terms of the recommendation for when to blow the sirens, what it was a year ago and what it is now.
We coordinated with the other jurisdictions to look at, first off, the idea of activating outdoor warning sirens for winds greater than 70 miles an hour and for hail greater than 1.75 inches, which is golf ball size. Our philosophy on this was that a 70-mile-an-hour wind is the equivalent to an EF0 tornado, and that the damages that they create are very comparable. So if we're activating these outdoor warning sirens for tornadoes, possibly an EF0, why aren't we affording this same kind of information to citizens outside? We did quite a bit of research on it. We did quite a bit of interaction with not only the jurisdictions themselves, we had interaction with the National Weather Service, and also our media providers down in Des Moines so that everybody understood what we were going to do. It was adopted as a recommendation by the Emergency Management Commission, and it has been instituted by the dispatch agencies. Where our agency comes in to play is the National Weather Service can put out a storm warning that has a tag that says greater than 70 miles an hour or hail greater than 1.75. But sometimes those warnings come out and we see something else happening with these storms, and our storm spotters help us identify that. And we can recommend to a dispatch agency activation of the sirens if the information we receive back from our storm spotters indicates the storm is stronger than originally thought, and we have done that. So policy has been working well, and I think that it is very valuable for us to have it.
The concern we got at the time we started having this conversation, or one of the main concerns, was that we would desensitize people to the sirens. I think there was this idea that, well, we'd be blowing them, you know, every week or something. How many more times, roughly, have we blown the sirens since we put this in?
My estimation would be possibly 2 to 3 times during the season that we are activating strictly for straight-line winds on it. Another key aspect that it has helped, this discussion has helped us be able to say to people when they say, well, I didn't hear the sirens inside my house. And I say, that's good. You've got a very well-insulated house. To get people to focus that those outdoor warning sirens are purely to alert you when you have less access to information to get inside, no matter whether it's winds that are spinning around or going straight, they're dangerous winds or hail, get inside. Get better information, protect yourself. And I think that as secondary message has also been very valuable in this process.
And it's one of the reasons that the project that Emergency Management partnered with MICA and RSVP on is so important, to provide the weather radios to the lower income individuals. I mean, I'd like to see everybody in Story County either have a weather radio or at least have an app on your phone where you can get the alerts. I mean, that's as easy as it comes. Sorry, Wayne.
My question was follow-up. I think, you know, obviously this is an excellent way of awareness, and we've got some anecdotal things that we can show how important it was, and it can not only maybe prevent injuries, but be of great value to preventing any future or property damage or cost of lives just by people recognizing this. How do we, what type of follow-up that we plan 6 months from now, a year from now, working through city councils, mayors, how do we continue to convey to the public in these outlying areas the value of the warning systems and the need to adhere to them on a regular basis?
We have two opportunities. First off, we start with our media outlets. Right now, September is Preparedness Month, and we have weekly been putting out messages, which was picked up, actually, had a good conversation with a reporter from the Iowa State Daily, myself and the emergency managers for Iowa State with them, pressing these sorts of things, not just for severe weather, but preparedness in general. Then every March we have Severe Weather Awareness Month that we again push out this as we come into that time frame to get the message out. And again, we've had pretty good support from the media. Another interaction that we have is that I will interface with media after we have events to highlight to them where we have had damages and also how some of our preparedness and some of our warning systems were valuable as a part of this. So through that and also through the revitalization of the CDR, as we were talking about, which is a volunteer organization, but working with them to use these volunteers to reach down both to their members and also to take some of these volunteers like RSVP to go out to other agencies and multiply our capability to get this message out to the right people.
Futuristic, Rick, and since you represent the board on Emergency Management Commission, and as I listened to some of the things that you have on your plate, when it comes to funding and looking at your budget request, hopefully you're starting to think in terms of what additional cost is going to be needed in order to assure that we have in place some of the measures that you're talking about, and I'm sure that that will be part of your ongoing discussion.
Yeah, Keith and I have a regular arm match, wrestling match scheduled in those regards, but something really, really good that Keith instituted that we're trying to build to. Talk for just a minute about the what I consider the reserve fund, the emergency fund that you've started to establish for emergency management.
When I assumed this position, I noticed that we did not have any way of procuring vitally needed resources should we have a rapid disaster like Joplin that occurred. And the pace of having to respond to these is very rapid, but we didn't have a funding source to do that. So the Emergency Management Agency has been setting aside within our budget to build this disaster fund so that we can, if need be, get those vital resources as needed. Now, it's going to be one of those things where the community that is being assisted will have to work to try and replace those funds down the road. And it's very important that we understand that the most of the responsibility for being prepared falls upon the jurisdiction itself.
Right.
And they have also got to be in parallel with us, work with us to make sure they have the resources they need. But the great thing about the commission is we can look at our capability gaps across the county and work to try and share resources as much as possible so that everybody doesn't have to have one of everything.
Right.
And we can be the most efficient and cost-effective when it comes to spending our dollars on this stuff. And we are also trying to grow our partnership through the CDR, the Coalition for Disaster Recovery, bring business online, along with the Medical Reserve Corps, to have them be a partnership so that if we need to reach out to them to get donated resources, that we know who to talk to and that we can demonstrate to them right up front that we do have a good process in place to use their resources effectively and efficiently. Looking ahead, in the coming quarter, emergency management will be focusing on revision of the emergency response plans as highlighted above. I know the recovery plan of the section will take considerable work, and the support of a wide variety of agencies is going to be critical. But it is a critical aspect to getting our communities up and running again after we have a disaster. The disaster debris removal program is much more complex than I would have ever have thought. And again, it's going to take a partnership between the jurisdictions that might be impacted, the Ames Reclamation Center, the Boone Landfill, and oftentimes we forget about the business partners, but also our transport agencies are all going to have to come together to put together an effective debris removal plan. I'll also be continuing to work with county administration to enhance the county's continuity of operations plan, which will be essential to ensuring the county has the ability to meet its responsibilities during a disaster. In the future, this process will take the active involvement of representatives from all of the departments, as they will need to evaluate their operations to determine how we will deal with the risk of disasters and what they should do to make their operations more resilient in the future. Melissa is trying to get ahead of Old Man Winter by running the annual I-35 closure drill. By exercising this plan, we hope to ensure we can effectively integrate all the available resources to accommodate travelers that may be stranded by a closure. Finally, we are looking forward to expanding our knowledge on disaster topics at the upcoming Hazmat Symposium and the Iowa Homeland Security Conference. With that, I'd like to open it up to your questions at this time.
Did we close the interstate once last winter?
Yeah.
I have been accused of being a bad person to be put into this job, but since I've taken this job, we've had to close it twice.
Twice.
And before that, Melissa only remembered it being closed once before. So,
I tell you what, having those gates out there has really helped a great deal when it comes to the closure that has taken place. It's unfortunate there are still a few travelers out there that seem to think that they can brave whatever the situation is instead of trying to get off the road and be safe in some of those conditions. But
this I-35 closure plan is another example. There's the Metro Multidisciplinary Safety Team in Ames that involves Iowa State Patrol, DOT, our offices, Ames. And through this department, we enhance this plan. So not only do we close the gates, but we have signs saying, exit here, go to this exit. At this exit, we can direct the passenger vehicles to hotels, and we have a place working with Iowa State to have the truckers be able to go park their rigs in a safe place as opposed to along the road. So, again, if we all work together, we can put together a plan at a fairly cost-effective method to take care of people.
Great. Thank you.
Keith, thanks. You're doing a great
well
job.
Job well done. Keep up the good work.
I need 1 minute.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next, we'll have Julie come up from the Ames Central Iowa Tourism and Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Good morning.
Good morning. Just take your time. Mm-hmm.
In addition to the report, I always have to bring you something.
I know. I always wait. I can't wait for my calendar.
Because you might not know what day it is.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Or hopefully what's going on that day.
It's holiday day for the Nevada Homecoming, but my son decided not to participate.
And holiday day.
You thought maybe he could put on a pair of my pants and shirt and go as Father's Day, but he quickly decided that wasn't going to happen. So,
holiday day, huh?
I've not heard
of
that.
New one for me.
Yeah. So the kid's supposed to stay home or something?
No, it's something different day every week or day of the week. So.
We just used to have pajama day or something. I get up there. Mm-hmm. Give me just a second. I want to load something to show you after a while.
Okay.
Okay, Central Iowa Tourism Region, you should have just gotten your bill, and hopefully the county paid it. And in the notes, you would have seen the benefits of being a member of the Central Iowa Tourism Region and all the counties that are involved with that. And the fee, I think, for Story County is $700 a year. But it does give the industry, both organizations like the Convention and Visitors Bureau and the private organizations of it, access to a lot of resources. So thank you for your continued support of that. Some of the benefits that we have received just this past year, directly or indirectly because of Central Iowa Tourism Region, one was the Sports Commission grant, which Ames, again, received a $50,000 grant from the state of Iowa. And those funds were used for such events that we did this summer as Special Olympics Iowa, the Iowa Games. We also hosted three new events, which are along the lines of adaptive sports. And adaptive sports is now one of the arms of the Iowa Sports Foundation, so it's like the Iowa Games. But this year they expanded, and we hosted the finals for goalball, which was sort of a combination of soccer for the blind and dodgeball type. It was inside. And then we also hosted Ultimate Frisbee outside early in the spring. And then over in July, because of the new track at Iowa State University, we hosted the National Junior Disability Championships, which was very, very successful. And then along with that, we were able to bid on hosting Beat Baseball, which is baseball for the blind, again in 2016, and just received that bid. So that,
that was hugely really successful helped. When it was here in 11?
It was here in 12.
In 12.
And very successful. And then it was just in Rochester this summer, and next summer it goes to Rochester, New York, and then it'll be back in the Midwest. So, again, those funds are extremely important for us to host those types of events all summer long when the population in the area is down substantially. This year we also, through CITR, received two additional grants. One was a marketing grant, And with that, we're starting a campaign, and you're going to see more things come out of this in the next year. If you can check the website of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, we now have a tab that's called Explore Central Iowa. And because of our relationship with the Sports Commission, we actually have sort of a diamond area that we call Central Iowa, and it goes from Story City to Nevada to Huxley, and then over to Boone, because that's really the radius of events for us. But this is an addition to the website that we funded with this grant, and what it does is it lists all the small towns in the area and their activities and their community celebrations, and they're in alphabetical order at the moment, so you'll see Boone, but then there's Cambridge, Collins, and we're starting to work with all these smaller communities because they have exciting things that visitors want to do. And especially during the summertime, we have a lot of visitors coming either for ISU orientation or for one of the events that we have, and if we can get them to stay or enjoy their activities here. So you'll see all this in here. But we also hope to build this out into a larger Central Iowa visit site that has a lot more for individuals to do.
Do we have a tie for Story County Conservation through you guys yet?
They are members of ours, so there is that tie there. But we need to strengthen that one, and the next one we're also going to do is a trails one with bicycle trails.
Outstanding.
Which has become huge, and the ability to connect the heart of Iowa with the High Trestle Trail through Slater is phenomenal, especially for enthusiasts.
Yeah, I saw some sales numbers over in Woodward from just before the High Trestle Trail, just after. I'm sure you saw the same thing. Really amazing what kind of impact it's having.
It has, and the ability for us to expand that and to make it more of a tourist attraction. We get a lot of people on football weekends that are actually coming in early in the fall and doing some bicycling, and the reason I know that is because the CVB director in Dubuque came over with his family.
Huh.
So whenever we can get another CVB director over, I think that's a really good thing. but so we are trying to expand beyond that and find more opportunities to promote all of Central Iowa. The other grant we got was an educational grant, and we did a customer service training for 143 individuals earlier this spring, so that was also good. We also received a grant from Silos and Smokestacks, and this was in partnership with Dubuque, Quad Cities, and Waterloo, where we hosted an international agricultural fam trip from Chicago. So the group started in Chicago, they went to Dubuque, traveled there throughout the day, then they went to Waterloo, toured the John Deere Works, et cetera, came to Ames and toured Iowa State University Agricultural Facilities Research, went back to Quad Cities, did John Deere, then back into to Chicago. And we have already gotten three leads out of that, so we're looking at doing international group ag tours as a potential for the area as well. And if we can get those here, we would obviously incorporate a lot of the other things to do in the area that the time that they're here, because they're very interested in doing what I'd call the odd things, the very intimate things you might do in communities in Iowa that are different from where they're from. Also, I wanted to make you aware that the Iowa Tourism Conference is the last part of October, and there are grants available. If anyone from Story County would like to attend that, we'd be glad to submit them for a grant that would pay for their attendance at that. It would cover the registration fees. Mm-hmm. So there is an opportunity for that as well. In addition, for the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau this summer, we had the great lineup of sporting events. It's just been a phenomenal year for visitors. We started with Odyssey of the Mind, went through record enrollment at Iowa State University again, and then the Farm Progress Show sort of ended our summer months. So a very busy time, and is why I'm here about, I think, about 2 months late, actually. So my apologies for that. It is also the time of year, and in your packet there is a community grant opportunity. Story County is a member of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and this is the community grant program that is 5% of the hotel motel tax collected by the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. And this year this amount will be about $72,000 that we will be able to distribute to nonprofit or profitable organizations that are looking for activities in educational, environmental, recreational or entertainment that are open to the public and would like assistance with those. And those applications are due by noon on October 17th. So if there's organizations that are interested in those. And then I thought it was important to give you a new update on the hotels that are under construction in Ames. We'll be adding over 160 rooms to our market, which is substantial because right now we're about 1,412. So 160 will help us greatly in that area, and it's a good time to have them on board. So there is a Town Place Suites going in, which is next to the Fairfield on 30 and 35. And then the Sleep Inn, which is on Highway 30 at South Dakota on the west side. So nice balance in rooms and that opportunity. So with that, any questions?
You've got, you don't have new office space, but you've got increased office space, right, after kicking Dan out.
Yeah, we kicked Dan out, and actually it gave us the opportunity to expand a little bit our relationship also with Iowa State University and Conference Planning and Management. We also now house their registration department, which has been advantageous for us to collect names and information of individuals coming to the events.
Outstanding.
Oh, cool.
Very good opportunity.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you
very
much.
Thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank
work. You.
Mm-hmm. Other reports. Discussion on Red Shirt Fridays. Leanne Harder.
I'm a very competitive person. I'd like to think I might take the gold home for the most varied items I brought before the board ever today.
And you learned something new today, too. You have to do bid openings.
Well, what is before you today is an idea that actually Brett McLean, with our Veterans Affairs Director, brought to me with the establishment of this new position. I'm going to take no credit for this idea. I'm just here being his voice, presenting it, because he is out at training today. It is an idea concept, Red Shirt Fridays. Red Shirt stands for Remember Everyone Deployed. So it is in recognition of those serving on our behalf. What Brett and I have put together is some suggestions for the board to consider if this was indeed a program worth implementing. First of all, it would be officially adopted, for lack of any better word, as by resolution of the Board of Supervisors. And I've set some dates in here. Our target date is to have the first Red Shirt Friday, the Friday prior to Veterans Day, in recognition of that holiday as well. So the resolution would be acted upon by you next Tuesday, September 30th. Throughout October, we would do varied kinds of outreach, similar to the Just Jeans for a Cause flyers that you see in the elevators, our blood drive, that type of stuff. So members of the public are aware, as well as staff, why we are wearing red shirts on Fridays, to make it build a little bit beyond just the walls of Story County government. And then the implementation, of course, as I said, would be expect on November 7th, that Friday prior to Veterans Day. Ideas may include that Story County consider purchasing the red shirts for employees to help encourage and implement this program. Just in anticipation of today's meeting, we did get estimates from several different vendors looking at 250, 275 shirts. Those through the sheriff's office that are required to be in uniform are excluded from that number of staff members. We have everything from little under $6 to $8.50 per t-shirt, so about $2,000 for a red shirt with a front and back design. Again, no solid estimates. Again, this is for idea for the board. And then for those in uniform, like the sheriff's office, that could not wear the red shirts, having available a red ribbon and a pin so that they could wear that and recognize red shirt as well. So the next steps, if this was a program which the board would seek to go a direction, direct staff to bring forward the resolution for adoption next week. Also have staff contact those elected officials and department heads to get an idea of sizes and numbers if we do want to order shirts. get the firm quotes and get those very rapidly so that we can ensure we have those done, the job done prior to November 7th, and then do the outreach materials, the flyers and so forth. And with that, that is all I have. I'll be glad to answer any questions to the best that I can.
Thoughts on funding? You said it was going to be about, a rough estimate of $2,000. Is there money available in the in Veterans Affairs?
Brett does have, he did receive a donation for $500 that would help defray some of the costs of that. He also did point out that, and I don't know if it was carried forth or I would assume it went just into the general fund. Last year when Story County did the Veterans Affairs for Boone County during that period of time, there was some payment for those types of services that we could look at, that those would may be carried forward.
I'm all in up to the point where we get to spending $2,500 of taxpayers' money to buy red shirts for the employees. I think if we can encourage the individual department heads to allow their employees to do it, that'd be great. If the employees wanted to purchase our own shirt, you know, that could be a deal where we could, you know, if we get enough people that are interested in buying their own shirt, we could probably get a pretty good deal from a vendor on that way. But I'm all in up to the point to where we're spending taxpayer dollars on the red shirts. So
how you feel about a donation that's appropriate to be used on that?
I would think if somebody would like to make or an entity would like to make the donation, I would be okay with that. But I think once we buy the shirts, and I think our HR director could talk to that about, you know, there's going to be requirements about the shirt can't only be worn at work, and then I get back to questioning whether that's an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars. So.
Yeah, I like the concept. I think you raise a very good question. To me, I think, again, it's something that individuals who wish to participate ought to be willing to assume the cost. It's just like we go out and buy athletic shirts for support our favorite local teams. I see this in the same category. There may be some other businesses or groups out there that might want to come up with some type of funding for a project such as this. If we receive that, obviously it could go towards that, depending upon the advertisement. My question would be is, has there been any thought in terms of how long this would occur? Are we talking 3 months, 90 days, full year? I think because you're talking about each Friday, I think we need to think through how long this would be in place. I think the idea of having it strictly has to be voluntary. I think that's clearly something that we would want to make sure that employees did not feel that because they didn't participate that they're looked down upon in some way or another. But so how it's presented, I think it's going to be important for us to pursue. But I think it does require an additional discussion. I like the idea of us having the resolution in support of the concept, but I do think there are some other details that would need to be worked out in terms of how it would be made available to our employees.
Okay. Good. I think we're good. You have a little homework to do.
And before you leave, I have to ask a question, not on red shirts, Dave, but just in your capacity. And I was going to make it under my announcement. I'm not going to be able to attend the safety meeting today because I have a dentist appointment at 2 o'clock. Lisa's planned to be there. Are you able to sit in on that today on my behalf today as another representative of the board?
And, I think I can.
Okay. Well, because we're in the process of planning for our safety day, and this is just getting us in preparation to finalize everything. So I'd appreciate it if you could, maybe. Okay.
While you're sitting there, if we can go back to the RFP for the communications equipment, Was that broken down by individual departments as yes. far as what? And that expense would be through their budget, through that individual's department's budget. So it's not a one-time hit for the general fund. It actually comes out of the individual department's budget.
Right. And with I think the microwave and the communications that's between here and the Justice Center
right.
is funded solely through the IT budget, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
I'll pass.
Rick.
Pass.
Okay. I'll
Don't
pass
look at him like you're shocked when you pass.
I'm make sure. Public
well,
forum
Dan's on vacation.
Comments from the public. I just wanted to use, just making sure I was on my toes. Comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Not seeing any traffic announcements from the supervisor. Wayne.
Well, I think I already mentioned one. Today at 2 o'clock, the safety committee will be meeting. And again, this is making final preparations for our safety day that's coming up in October. So I'm really excited about some of the things that we're doing there. Tonight at 6 o'clock, I will be representing the board as we meet with clients and family members of CLP, just to kind of give them a little update as to where we are with the transition that is in place and the RFPs that are out currently there. Not sure how many we will expect, but Ron, Maureen, probably of his staff, Deb Shulroth, and myself are planning to be there and to bring forth some background information. And then tomorrow, Thursday, at 8:30, I'm attending the board meeting in Des Moines for HRDA. I think the board is aware that we are having some real challenges, not only us, but CIRIDE, CIT, with getting enough drivers. And Deb and I met with the HRDA staff with to discuss some issues with mainstream living last week. And we also, I met with Liz Beck, Jane Halliburton, and the operations manager there at Heartland to discuss some transportation issues involving Heartland Senior Service. So as of this week and next week, because of things out of the control of the HRDA, we are down to only 7 buses operating, which means that there's going to be some adjustments made in the scheduling and the availability of rides. And so they're doing all they can to communicate to the people that use that service, but it is creating a challenge for agencies that rely on HRDA being the sole means of transportation, getting some of the clients to and from their home and to their location. So we're in constant communication. I'm in constant communication with them, and hopefully we're going to find a temporary fix for this. But the shortage of drivers, you know, Rick, I think you alluded to it earlier, the unemployment rate in Story County, and particularly our area, is quite low, and there's just not a lot of demands for the type of services that we provide. And so I think this may go several months before we are able to be back at full staff with the number of drivers. We do have buses available that are sitting now, and there's a possibility that if there are other outside agencies or groups that want to contract with us to help provide service, you're certainly willing to discuss that. So, but I just wanted to announce to the citizens of Story County that the next few weeks particularly, there's going to be some particular challenges with the HRDA transportation services due to the fact that we just don't have enough drivers.
Can't run routes without drivers. I mean, while we would all love to see expanded service from HRDA and expanded service in Story County, the reality is everybody with is in the industry where you need a CDL is struggling to find employees, and it's really hitting HRDA hard.
Right. So other than that, that's it.
Apparently, somebody sitting at this table put me on a ISAC committee on roads and bridges. I'm not going to name any names, Wayne. But so I've got a meeting down at ISAC tomorrow on a roads and bridges supervisors advisory group for roads and bridges in Iowa. So
good.
Really enthusiastic about it.
Okay.
Well, there are several going to be several committees meeting down there. I just got the email on that. So, yeah, so I'm glad that I don't have to go.
And the only thing I'll add is that the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Board will meet Thursday afternoon at 1:30 at the HSC building in Ames. And with that, we'll take a motion for adjournment.
So moved. Second.
Like we're all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye, we're adjourned.